everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Words About Biology. Being the first episode, this is going to run a little bit differently than the average episode I have planned. I'm going to start off this podcast with introducing myself and also talking about the podcast and where I see the podcast going, what sort of content I kind of have planned, and my overall hopes for it. So my name is Andrea Bedford. I am a proud Canadian. I grew up in a town called Stratford, Ontario. Yes, you may have heard of it as the place where Justin Bieber is from, and for that I apologize. I grew up there, and then I went to the University of Guelph, where I did both my undergrad and my PhD. I would call myself an animal physiologist. I've also done a lot of nutrition work, a lot of molecular, and a lot of microbiology. So kind of fitting into all those slots, I did my PhD working with pigs. Now, I guess before I get any further, I should really talk about what do I mean when I say I'm an animal physiologist. When I'm talking about physiology, I mean how the processes within an animal, or within a human for that matter, all interact and relate to outcomes. For example, as it relates to nutrition, when we're talking about physiology, it's the digestion, it's the absorption of the nutrients, it's how those absorbed nutrients are broken down and then used. All those processes together can be considered physiology. And that being said, most of the work that I've done has been relating to understanding how physiology works and how different pathways within animals interact or are influenced by nutrition and how that affects the animals and their growth and development. As I mentioned, I did my PhD working with pigs. After that, I moved on to a position where I worked with broiler chickens, and I most recently finished a position working with dairy cows. So I've moved across species, but I'm sticking with agricultural animals and really looking at using nutrition as a tool to benefit these animals. This could mean their health, their growth, their development, producing a superior product for consumers. So a lot of the things that I will be talking about on this podcast may be biased towards agricultural animals, but I'm gonna try to branch out a little more, try to cover some more topics, maybe just topics that I think are relevant to today's society and topics that I think more people should be interested in or should be knowledgeable about. So all that being said, my overall goal with this podcast is to take these research topics and bring them to you, bring them to the general public, bring them in an understandable way that's not picking up a journal article and reading 10 pages of things you maybe don't understand. It's showing the relevance of today's research in biology for society and bringing those ideas to you in an understandable way. There's so much biological research on such a wide range of topics happening right now, but very little of it is even seen or heard of by people outside universities or the scientific research realms. So the idea behind this podcast is to discuss current research topics in an accessible way that shows their relevance to the general public. I know I see it when I'm browsing on Reddit. Explain it like I'm five is kind of a popular thing. I don't really want to explain it like you're five. I want to explain it like you're the regular person you are. There's a lot of cool stuff happening, and I feel like there's not enough bridges between the researchers and everyone else. So each week, I'm hoping to tackle a different subject area, possibly a specific research article that's current and relevant, go through the work that's being done on it and why we should care. Possibly just picking up a topic that I think is important and needs to be discussed. And maybe we go through a couple journal articles that have recent research with it, or maybe it's just a general discussion. That being said, if you're listening along and there's something related to biology you've been wondering about, send me a message. I'll give you my contact information at the end of each episode, and we'll see what we can do going forward. As this is the first episode, I thought it might be best to start with my background in biology, give you an idea of my expertise, and specifically today I'm going to talk about my university experience. As I previously mentioned, I received both my bachelor's degree and my PhD at the University of Guelph. My undergrad major was animal biology, with courses ranging from animal production systems, so how do we raise animals for human consumption, to nutrition, so how do we best feed the animals, to biotechnology, so what up-and-coming scientific techniques can we use to improve how we raise production animals. After completing my undergraduate degree, I accepted a PhD position working at Guelph with pigs. The area I was looking at specifically and the problem I was addressing was how to alleviate the physiological stress piglets experience during weaning to improve their performance and well-being after weaning. So what does that mean exactly? In the swine industry, there's a trend to wean piglets early, roughly around 3 weeks of age. And the reason behind this is that it reduces the likelihood of pathogen transfer from the sow or the mother to the piglets. And it also allows the sow to be rebred earlier and therefore improving productivity. Now, this weaning process is very stressful on piglets. You think about them being moved to a new environment, mixed with new piglets they haven't met before, being fed this strange solid food that definitely isn't milk. It's not the ideal situation for these animals. And on top of this, at 3 weeks of age, the digestive system of these piglets isn't fully developed. This means that while we're feeding them this solid food that's been specially formulated for piglets, they still may not be able to fully digest and utilize all the nutrients within that feed. Now, it could be easy to say, so why don't we improve the quality of those diets even further? Why don't we make it so that they can easily digest and utilize all the nutrients? What's holding us back here is the cost. When we're thinking about feeding piglets, we're thinking about the energy of the diets and then also the protein. These are fast-growing animals and we're looking at the building blocks of what they need. So comparing possible feed ingredients, when we're talking about protein, it's either going to be a animal source protein or a plant source protein. When we're talking animal source, often it is meat meals, feather meal, blood meals. When we're talking about a vegetable source, it's commonly soybean meal. Now the big difference here is price. The animal source proteins tend to be more expensive than the plant source proteins. So it would be optimal for the producer to include more plant source proteins into these diets. However, there are issues with the digestibility of these plant source proteins. For example, soybean meal, while a great source of protein, is not the most digestible by piglets. So that's kind of the trade-off. They're looking at the cost benefit or how little can they spend on feed, I guess, to get the most production. Another problem, besides just reformulating these diets to make them more digestible, is that piglets at this stage, they don't know how to eat yet, right? Like they're just coming from the sow, from nursing, and they're not quite sure what the solid food is. So even getting them on feed and getting them to start consuming can be an issue. And there have been a number of strategies to try and improve this area, try to get the piglets on feed quicker. However, it's quite often that you see a growth lag in these animals. So upon weaning, they're stressed out, they're not eating as much, and so you can see that they're not gaining as much as they should be at this stage. So the research that I did was in an effort to avoid this growth lag and see what we could do to get these animals on feed and eating and improve their nutrient digestion and absorption. So before I talk about the pig work that I did, I need to back up and talk about the approach that we took to try and solve this problem. So in the sow's milk, there are a number of factors that are great for the piglet's growth. And one of these specific factors is called epidermal growth factor. So if we break that down, epidermal refers to the skin, so it improves the development of the epidermis, or the skin cells of these animals. I'm going to refer to it here as EGF. So our thought was that EGF is one of these important factors, and removing the piglets from the sow, and thus removing them from a source of EGF, is having an impact on their development or on their developmental lag on weaning. And perhaps supplementing EGF post-weaning could improve the intestinal development of these piglets and thus improve their ability to digest and absorb nutrients from their feed. So then we're left with the question, where do we get EGF? Or how do we make EGF so that we can add it into these diets? Now, you are able to buy synthetic proteins. You can have them designed and produced for you synthetically, but this can be very expensive. So the approach we took was designing a bacteria to produce this EGF for us. Now, this sounds more complicated than it is, maybe, in biology. Possible to create a DNA plasmid. A plasmid is simply a circular piece of DNA. And on this plasmid, you can put pretty much whatever you want. You're creating it for your own purposes. So what we put on our designed plasmid was the porcine EGF gene, which we isolated ourselves from the pigs. And then also a promoter, which controls the expression of this gene. For our purposes, we used a pH-induced promoter, meaning our bacteria would be making EGF when kept in acidic conditions. So this means the stomach, the small intestine. Further, the bacteria we used was a lactic acid bacteria. These are common bacteria in the production of cheeses, so it does have a generally regarded as safe status. And because it's a lactic acid bacteria, it itself is producing its own acidic environment. So once you culture it enough, there is enough acid in its media that it will produce the EGF. So we inserted this plasmid into our bacteria and pretty much used it as a factory. So we raised the bacteria in a liquid culture, tested that liquid culture for the EGF secretion. We do this using a method called Western blotting, which is essentially a method for protein quantification. So once we had confirmed that the bacteria was producing the EGF and at a level that was appropriate for our application, we centrifuged the media. This means we spun it around really fast and used centrifugal force to spin out the bacteria and then harvest the supernatant, so all the liquid goods that contained the EGF. So this was our basic method for producing EGF in a kind of cost-effective way. And then we took this liquid supernatant containing the EGF and top-dressed the feed every day. What I mean by top-dressed is that once the solid feed was placed in the troughs for the piglets, I would go in with my liquid and pour it over the top and kind of give it a good mix in. It ended up being kind of a mush, I guess. But pigs actually preferred that. I mean, it's closer to a liquid than it is the dry pelleted feed. So there was no problem having these piglets eat this EGF-containing feed. So we got these piglets right at weaning, so 3 weeks of age, and then split them into treatment groups. So we had a group of pigs receiving the EGF, and then a group of pigs receiving just the same media that the bacteria was grown in, but without the EGF. So through these 3 weeks, we followed the piglets' growth. So we did weekly weigh-ins on these piglets, and then also did fecal scores. One of the signs of an unhealthy piglet is diarrhea. So we checked fecal consistency, which is not the most glamorous job, but can be very useful in determining digestive health. In following these piglets through 3 weeks, we saw significant differences in both the average daily gain and the feed efficiency. What I mean by that is that our piglets that were fed the EGF supplement gained significantly more weight over the three-week period, and then also gained more weight per kilo of feed eaten. So they were more efficient with what they did consume. Now, once we saw these changes in growth, we wanted to know why. So what are the physiological reasons behind this growth, and how is this EGF working in these piglets? Now, to do this, we had to sacrifice some piglets. So at three weeks on treatment, or day 21 on EGF, we took about a quarter of the piglets and we sacrificed them for sampling. And from these pigs, we took tissue from the jejunum, which is a part of the small intestine that is perhaps the most active in digesting and absorbing nutrients for these piglets. There were a couple specific things we were interested in looking at, or things that we thought might be changed by the EGF. These included the physical morphology. So in looking at the intestine, how is its development physically changed? We looked at the goblet cell count. So goblet cells are kind of long columnar epithelial cells. They line the small intestine. And their job is to secrete mucins, so kind of the mucus layer of the small intestine that helps form the front line of defense. So there, it's a layer preventing pathogens or bad things from getting through. And we thought maybe they could be being affected by EGF to help the piglets. We also looked at glucose transporters, so specifically within the intestinal lining. Do we see changes in how the piglets are taking up glucose, which could obviously affect their growth, glucose being a big source of energy for them? And then finally, we looked at growth factor receptors. So there are also a number of receptors lining the small intestine that can have a big influence on piglet development. So going back, we did end up seeing significant changes in the intestine morphology. So what we saw were the piglets that received EGF had much longer intestinal villi, and those are those little finger-like projections that stick out from the edge of the intestine. And what that means is that there's more surface area for absorption, which is obviously better for these piglets. Next, with the goblet cells, we saw increased goblet cell counts in the EGF piglets as well. So as I said before, this could mean an increased host defense or an increased barrier against pathogen or bacteria or bad stuff that could be harming these piglets. As far as the glucose transporters, we saw a change in one of them. We'll call it SGLT1. It's a glucose transporter that works in the small intestine. So we saw a bit of an improvement there. We looked at a second glucose transporter as well and didn't see a difference in it. So maybe about halfway on that. And looking at growth factor receptors, we didn't see any differences between the EGF pigs and the control pigs. So bringing this together, we proposed a model of EGF action, and I'll put up a picture of this on the blog, which may or may not be helpful to you, but I'll try to explain it as well as possible. So going back, we saw increased villi height, which could increase nutrient absorption and thus increase piglet growth. We also saw increased goblet cells, which could indirectly lead to piglet growth through increased immune response or increased defense against pathogens. We saw an increase in one of the glucose transporters, so this could mean increased glucose uptake and again contribute to increased piglet growth. So this is all well and good. Doing this experiment in a lab is great, and you can see that, hey, maybe if we're given EGF to our pigs, they're getting a better start post-weaning. But how is this actually applied in real life? And this is one of the important questions that I think researchers all need to think about. And I think they do. I'm not saying they don't. But bringing an idea from proof of concept through to actual application and how can we use this to improve our current systems? So what are the limits to using this EGF? I would absolutely say that one of them is the fact that we're using a genetically modified bacteria to produce this protein. Now, while I know that there's no problem with doing that, and we're not feeding the piglets any bacteria, there's no bacteria entering any system, it's simply being used as a factory, there may be an issue with public reception of a product like this due to the, I guess, propaganda surrounding the use of genetically modified organisms. And that's a whole other conversation for a different podcast. So we'll get there. So yes, the bacteria could be a problem, but then also the production capability of the bacteria. So we were able to produce enough in about a 3-liter fermentation of this bacteria to sustain this research. But that's not really realistic in the real world, and I can't see that producers are going to go in and take a liquid and chop dress the feed for their piglets every time. So one of the things going forward would be increasing the epidermal growth factor production, whether that means finding a different organism that can produce more, finding a way to upscale it in a feasible way, and then also finding a more convenient way of incorporating it into the diets. And this might mean we're using it in pelleting. So you could buy the EGF as a separate ingredient, put it as a part of your formulation that gets all mixed in together, and then it's within the crumble that your piglets would receive already. But that's probably years of experimentation to go, so it's a long way from proof of concept that something can work to actually having it as a product or as something that can be applied in industry today. But it's something really important to think about. After all, we're not just doing the research to do the research. We want to make a difference in how things are working in the world. So I think that's about where I'm going to stop for the first week. Just to give you a little taste of hopefully something that sounds interesting and kind of an idea of the direction of where we're going. I will tell you that last week I had the opportunity to attend the ADSA meeting, or the American Dairy Science Association General Meeting, which was in Knoxville. There was a lot of good presentations, a lot of good speakers, a lot of good information put out there, and I plan on bringing together kind of my 2 or 3 top presentations I attended, and I want to discuss those with you and kind of what those can mean for the future of dairy production. So hopefully that sounds at least a little bit interesting to you. If not, sorry, I'm going to do it anyways. But yeah, hopefully this has piqued your interest enough, and you'll be here next week to hear the next one. So I want to thank you for listening to Words About Biology. Feel free to follow me on Instagram. It's Words About Biology. You can reach me by email at wordsaboutbiology@gmail.com. And you can follow the blog, which is essentially going to be posted with each podcast, at wordsaboutbiology.wordpress.com. With that, I hope you guys tune in next time. Have a great week. Stay engaged and stay interested in biology.